everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass, and welcome to It's All About Food. How are you today? I just wanted to tell you that this show is pre-recorded. So even though we've been focusing on starting a new live call-in, which has been great the last few weeks, don't call in because I can't hear you. Now, if you want, you can always email me at info@realmeals.org, and then I can see everything, and I can address it on the next program. And I actually may address some questions people have had this past week on today's show. Now, before we get into the program and bring on my guest, and I'm really excited to have this guest on, but you'll find out who it is in a moment, I wanted to mention the Food Revolution Summit. I mentioned it last week, and if you haven't registered yet, I recommend you do so. It's free, and it's amazing. You can find out more if you go to responsibleeatingandliving.com. That's where I live. On the right-hand side, you can see the information for the Food Revolution Summit. It starts at the end of the month. It's a 9-day intense online program where you'll hear from many wonderful food experts interviewed by the one and only John Robbins. And I'm excited to be a part of this program. I'll be offering up some wonderful recipes, all new recipes that I'm creating right now, actually. And they'll be offered and presented during the summit. So please check that out at responsibleeatingandliving.com. Register. It's free. It's good. It's fun. It's informative. Be there. I'll see you there. Okay. Now, let's move on. And I want to introduce my guest. He's been on for the last two shows, and we didn't quite finish everything we wanted to talk about. So here he is, Gary DiMatte, the co-founder of Responsible Eating and Living. Gary, how are you?
I'm back. And I think I was on the last show, but I haven't been on two shows in a row, have I?
Yes.
No. No, I haven't. I was on last week, and now I'm on this week.
You did part two of the Furman show. And then we did a whole show.
Oh, you're right.
But you know, it was so much fun and it went by so quickly.
It did, and I'm back again. And why is it that he's back, you might be asking yourself. Well, I'm here to talk about food with Karen because I love food.
What a concept.
And I'm here to talk about all kinds of other things. And one thing I wanted to bring up is the summit. Let's talk about that a minute, because does everybody know who John Robbins is? I mean, do they know who you're talking about?
You know, that's a really good
point. And Ocean Robbins?
John and Ocean Robbins.
I think we need to tell a little story about John and
absolutely
then talk about Ocean and Deo.
They have a fascinating story, and somebody's got to do a biopic on them one day.
I hope it's in the works. If not, hey, John, I'm here.
Well, John Robbins is the son of Irv Robbins, who is the co-founder of Baskin and Robbins Ice Cream. And Irv Robbins and John's uncle, Baskin, put Baskin and Robbins together. And John grew up eating ice cream every day. He had an ice cream cone swimming pool. He wasn't a very healthy child.
An ice cream cone swimming pool? You mean it was shaped like an ice cream cone?
Yeah.
The swimming pool was shaped like an ice cream cone?
Yeah.
That's amazing. Wow.
And he had ice cream every day whenever he wanted. And then
nephew Noah would like that.
Oh, who wouldn't? And when he was a rebellious teenager and college student
in the 60s,
hello,
going to Berkeley, I mean, come on.
Exactly. He gave up the ice cream empire. He was being groomed to follow in his father's path. He had two sisters, but his father had his eye on John to take over. And it wasn't John's calling.
No.
Not at all.
And what was John's calling?
And, well, John got together with Deo, who is his loving, wonderful wife, and they...
Partner.
They yeah, lived up
she's
in...
She's amazing.
She is.
Shout
she's,
out to Deo. Deo, we love you.
She is sunshine and energy and all
she's
smiles.
She's like a spring day in New York, which we're experiencing right now. Go out and vote, by the way, if you live in New York. It's time to vote. Okay, sorry. I always get you off the track.
They lived on $600 a year.
Yes.
And although that was back in the 80s, early 80s, that's still not a lot of money.
No.
They lived in a little log cabin. They grew their own food. It was fascinating. You can hear more about that. I interviewed John on this program a few years ago, and you could find that at Responsible Eating and Living, because everything, all these shows are archived there and transcribed, all 7 years worth.
Yes, they are archived.
I digress.
And transcribed. And you can find it in the archives here at Responsible Eating Living, correct?
Yes, very easy to find.
Right.
Now, John and Deo came out of living in the wilderness and moved back to
civilization.
Civilization, exactly. And he wrote his groundbreaking bestseller, Diet for New America. It was published in 1987. And he was one of the first who connected the impact of our food choices on our own personal health, the health of the planet, and the treatment of the animals.
And Diet for a New America was followed up by what book?
Well, he's written many books since then.
Mm-hmm.
Diet for a New America was kind of updated and revised in a book called The Food Revolution.
Hey, that's what I was getting at.
Food
Revolution Summit. So that was the tie-in that I was trying to make with John Robbins and this Food Revolution Summit that you're doing with John. And then John and Deo's son, Ocean.
And they're really taking advantage of what's available to us in the 21st century, the internet, and making all this wonderful information available for everyone online.
Yes, and if you haven't read Diet for a New America, and you are interested in transitioning to a plant-based diet, and you are listening to this show, I recommend you start with that book. It's a classic, but it's where I started.
You know what else is good? There are more and more documentaries now about our food system, and that's a great thing. But one of the first, it may have been even the first that I can remember, and it blew everyone away, was the PBS documentary on John Robbins' story, Diet for New America. You can find it on YouTube and watch it for
free. Check it out. Because no one likes to read anymore. So check it out on the YouTube. YouTube. Speaking of YouTube, are we finished with John, or do we need to say more?
Yeah, I just wanted to say one thing. My favorite thing in that documentary, Diet for New America, Dr. Michael Klepper is in that film, and he talks about when he was a physician in an emergency room and all of the heart attack patients that would be rolled in. And he showed a vial of blood taken from a patient who had just had a heart attack. Anyway, I'm getting things mixed up. But he took a vial of blood from a patient who had just had a meal at McDonald's, a hamburger and a thick shake. And you can see the fat in the vial.
Right.
It was incredible. And then the other thing was they show some open heart surgery. And you can see the fat surrounding all of the vital organs. And
I remember that scene very well. Yes. And like I said, that's where I started, thanks to Karen Hartglass, who said, you know, I've got a couple of books for you to read if you're really serious, Gary, about transitioning to this plant-based diet. Only she didn't say transitioning to a plant-based diet. She said go vegan.
Go
vegan. And it'll solve all of your ills. It'll fix what ails you. So I started with Diet for a New America, and another book, and this is a really woo-woo-wah-wah book, but maybe some of you out there have read it, is The Way of the Peaceful Warrior. Those were the two books I started with. By Dan Millman.
Who is a friend of John Robbins.
Exactly, and that was another point. And when we say ocean, we're not talking about the great body of water that's out there surrounding all of us. We're talking about John's son, Ocean. So I know sometimes we talk so fast when we're together, but when we say Ocean, we mean John's brilliant son, Ocean, who is also a part of the Food Revolution Summit.
Yeah, he's actually the force behind the Food Revolution Summit.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's doing an excellent, excellent job.
He would be the Michael Corleone of the Corleone family, if the Corleone family was nice and compassionate and didn't...
I have to also humbly say that the Food Revolution Summit will be offering a Food Revolution family cookbook. And I'm the editor of that cookbook, and Gary and I have contributed a bunch of recipes in it.
Right, so...
it's a really nice collection. But can I talk about recipes
right
now?
You may talk about recipes.
So in the news today...
Other than having to vote if you're living in New York area.
Get out and vote.
Get out and vote in the primaries. Vote, 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 vote.
And often.
And look, that horn out there. We're in New York City, can you tell? There's taxi cabs all around us.
We're not playing samples of New York City sounds. These are real New York
right,
City
sounds. So the disclaimer here is that if you hear somebody yelling profanities, it's not us. It's people outside of our studio window. So,
yeah,
which isn't soundproof, obviously.
Okay, so I think it was yesterday. The National Multiple Sclerosis Society has an award ceremony called Books for a Better Life. And this was their 20th award ceremony. And a number of books were awarded a Book for a Better Life award. And I never heard of it before. And there's a lot of wonderful books that have won, including, drum roll, please.
Here, let me do a drum roll.
Gary's good at that because he's a real drummer.
I was.
Okay. So, Living the Farm Sanctuary Life, you may have heard that by Gene Barr with Gene Stone. And there are 100 recipes in there, and three of them, the best ones in the book.
Yeah, the totally, totally best ones.
are from Karen Hartglass and Gary DeMattei.
Hooray!
And I want to say that they're more from Gary DeMattei than Karen Hartglass, these particular recipes.
Oh, stop it.
But
no, this book is beautiful. I have
a
copy of it in front of me, and just the first few pictures of the animals at the sanctuary is just glorious. And Gene's story is remarkable, and pick it up, and the recipes are great, but it's really all about the happier, healthier, more compassionate life that they talk about in part one of the book.
So what I thought was interesting about this National MS Society 20th Anniversary Books for a Better Life program is that a number of the books that they chose as winners promote a vegan plant-based diet, not just the Farm Sanctuary, but Gina Hamshaw's cookbook, Food 52 Vegan by 10 Speed Press, won an award. She has wonderful recipes. I spoke to her on this program.
She's on this program too.
One of my favorites of her recipe that we actually make. I don't make too many recipes by other people, but one that I like is her raw pecan pie.
It's delicious. It's the greatest thing. One of the greatest things.
Yep. And you can find it online. It's free.
And tell me how simple it is.
It is. Well, that's the amazing. You know, I used to do an all raw diet, and I brought the best of it into my current vegan life with cooked and raw food. But the vegan raw desserts are the best desserts possible and the easiest. You just put everything in a food processor, pretty much.
And they're so sweet and good, and I hate this word, but I'm going to use it, satisfying. Oh, I was so satisfied after I had that meal. I was very satisfied.
Yeah, and it's all good food. You could have that food for breakfast.
Yes, it was delicious and is delicious, and hopefully it'll make an appearance sometime soon at our house.
So the other winner I wanted to mention is Do Unto Animals by Tracy Stewart.
Right.
You may know her as the wife of John Stewart, and they have a sanctuary now. So there are a number of vegan books, and what's fascinating to me about that, and I hope the National Multiple Sclerosis Society is connecting the dots here, is that multiple sclerosis can be prevented and in some cases halted and even some cases reversed by a nutrient-dense, plant-rich diet.
Right.
And it would be amazing if they got that message.
Maybe they are, because obviously there are a lot of green books there. So without us knowing too much more than just who these winners are, anybody out there from that organization want to let us know, send us an email, and let us know what you're doing in the way of promoting the vegan message with respect to the disease that you're all doing the best job possible to fight for.
Yeah, we don't mention multiple sclerosis very often, but I have worked with a number of people who have been diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. It's a scary diagnosis. It doesn't get as much press as heart disease and cancer, but surprisingly, the solutions or the way to healing and recovery are the same.
Right. For so many things.
I
complained to Karen yesterday. We did a lot of manual labor work. And I said, yeah, I might have arthritis in my wrist. And she said, wait, you don't get arthritis. You're a vegan. And I said, well, maybe it's residual arthritis.
Well, you could be a vegan and have arthritis if you're eating a lot of processed, refined foods.
Yeah.
A lot of white bread, white pasta, bagels, cheese.
That's what you said, so I'm glad you...
I'm a broken record. Repetitive.
You interjected that there. So say that again, because that's really important. It was very important to me, because I don't eat... And then I proceeded to ask you, well, do you think my vegan plan... I refuse to say diet, but my vegan, the food that I eat that's vegan, do you think it's processed, highly processed, or do you think it actually is goes along those lines? And you said, what I eat is fine. So highly processed, let's explain that, because that's really important to explain what highly processed means. A lot of people may not know that.
Yeah, and it ties in a number of things that I just want to quickly mention. One is the question we got last week, where a woman asked about people not wanting to use the word vegan and using the word plant-based instead. And I also want to tie in our blog, now in day 433 today, which I haven't posted yet, where we actually post what we eat every day. It's real, it's not fancy, it's rustic. And so if you want to see what we're eating, you could judge if what we're eating is healthy or not by seeing what we eat every day. And let us know what you think. If you think we can be doing better, I'd really be open to hearing about that. And you know, everybody could be doing better. We're not perfect.
And no, that's not
what
at
it's,
all.
And that's what it's not what it's about, being perfect.
You know what I just gave up? Is I just gave up caffeine. And it's been, 4 days now?
Mm-hmm.
And I drink a lot of tea. And I used to drink a lot of coffee. And before that, I drank a lot of Diet Coke. Now, you have to understand when I say a lot, I know a lot of you out there think you're, you also drink a lot of diet soda, but I drank several liters a day, so...
Whoa.
Yeah, plus coffee, plus anything else that had caffeine in it. So, the last few days, I decided I just wasn't feeling right after drinking my morning 6 or 7 cups of tea. So I stopped, and now I'm drinking Ticino. And I'm telling you, I feel so much better. Karen wanted to talk about breathing today, but we'll just say that my breathing has improved.
Okay, now I have 3 things that I have to talk about since you started talking.
But yeah, I know you wanted to talk about breathing. I just want you to segue into breathing.
I want to talk about breathing. I want to talk about diet soda, and I want to get back to what we were talking about, which was vegan and getting arthritis.
Oh, yes, and processed food.
Yeah.
So what is... Okay, so I...
So what we mentioned last week when the caller wanted to know the difference between vegan and plant-based and why some people don't want to call themselves vegan, as I mentioned last week, it's this issue where you can be vegan but not be eating healthy foods, and you can be eating white flour breads, pasta, white flour pastas, and all kinds of cookies and cakes and bagels and cheese and highly refined foods, anything that comes in a box with extra salt, extra sugar, extra oil, all of these almost prepared foods like rice-a-roni or these pre-made hamburger helpers and all these
and
foods.
We're talking the vegan versions of those now, right?
Yeah, there are vegan versions, absolutely.
Right.
And if you don't make it yourself, you don't know how much sugar, salt, and oil, artificial ingredients, preservatives, all kinds of things in there that wreak havoc in your body. So you could be eating no animal products at all, but still doing devastating things to your body.
Right. So you can still get arthritis then if you are a dirty vegan.
Right. Dirty vegan.
Not to be confused with dirty martini.
Oh, that sounds good right now.
Sounds good at 10:41 in the morning.
Oh, yeah,
when we're recording
I
would
use a dirty martini.
And don't
extra
forget,
olives.
If you're just tuning in, don't forget, we mentioned at the beginning of the show, we're really promoting calling in to this show, but this particular show we're pre-recording because it's election day, as we mentioned, here in New York City, and we're going to get out and vote and do a lot of other things. So we pre-recorded the show because you're worth it to us to do that. And
we had a lot of things to say, but we couldn't say it live at 4 o'clock. So
and I'm Gary DiMattei, Karen's...
And I'm Karen Hartglass.
Yes.
Okay, now I wanted to talk about diet soda briefly because you beautifully started talking about caffeine and coffee and tea.
And breathing.
One of the things that studies don't do that test for safety of a certain product. You know, sometimes, often they test on animals, non-human animals, and that doesn't tell us anything about how it affects humans. But also, if they test a food product on humans, they usually test a small amount. So they might say, okay, one glass of Diet Coke a day, and they follow people and see how it impacts them. But a lot of people, like Gary said, are drinking 2 liters a day.
I drank 7 to 8 liters a day. I had a liter mug. I owned a theater. It was basically a theater with a bar. So when you work in the theater, you work 21, 22 hours a day. And I would walk around and just go behind the bar and fill up my liter mug with Diet Coke. And that's the thing that would sustain me all day. Well, it wouldn't sustain me. I mean,
obviously, the interesting thing about artificial sweeteners is they make you hungry.
Right.
They increase your appetite.
And a great segue there is I've mentioned many times that as soon as I went on a plant-based vegan diet, which I don't like the word diet, but I'll use it, I started shedding weight, losing pounds, because I was 100 pounds heavier than I am now when I was drinking 7 to 8 liters of Diet Coke a day. So that's my story. And I was always hungry. And then later, fast forward, Karen gave me some information about how Diet Coke stimulates your appetite. It makes you hungry. And I just find that remarkably ironic.
Okay, now let's talk about breathing, because I really wanted to open the program talking about breathing, which I do from time to time, because I know we all forget about breathing.
As I like to say, I love breathing. It's what I do for a living. Think about it. You're going to laugh when you're sitting at your desk later today or wherever you are.
It's what we all do for a living.
Yeah.
And
it's
so
important to breathe.
I think it's really good to think about breathing from time to time. And so when I remember to think about it, that's when I come along on this program and remind you, because I find it really helpful. Now, what's lovely right now about breathing, not only are we doing it for a living to keep us alive, because as I like to say, we can do without food for a few days or months, actually. We can do without water for a little while, but we cannot do without breathing for more than maybe 4 minutes if you're
Houdini.
If you're really good at holding your breath.
But we don't know anything about that. We just made that 4 minute comment. don't write in with, I've held my breath for 7 hours.
Right.
And you guys are all idiots.
So what's particularly lovely about breathing right here, right now, is spring is finally here. It's late, but it's here, and the air smells phenomenal. There are little buds on the trees. There are little baby birds that are twittering out there.
Right.
And the air is really lovely. So whatever you're going through right now, and so many of us have stress in our lives for so many reasons. Either you're at work and you don't like your job, or you want a job and you don't have one,
right,
and you're stressing, or you have health issues, and many of us have a wide range of health issues. Some of them are chronic. Some of them are a serious crisis. Some are just annoying. We have family members and dear friends who are going through issues. There's all kinds of reasons to be stressful. For those of you who care about this election, you may be stressed out about
the anxiety.
Who
sure
might be president?
So many people are feeling right now.
Take a moment. Breathe. Breathe in all the sunshiny, white, magical, energized, beautiful, full light goodness. And release the tension and breathe out all the crap, all the gunk, all the toxicity. Let it out. And then breathe in all the beautiful light, the full spectrum of colors, the different colors that can address all kinds of issues in your body. Breathe it in, all that energy, and then release and let it out.
And don't lift your shoulders.
That's right. That's a good point. You know, I learned this when I studied voice, And a lot of people, especially when stressed, when you say taking a deep breath, they raise their shoulders right away and they fill up their chest, and they're not filling up the area that really needs to be filled, which is the bottom of our lungs, starting low and deep in the belly.
Right. It's kind of almost like you're sucking air through a straw. That's what I used to tell my students when we were doing breathing exercises in acting class. Almost like you keep your shoulders down, relax, but it's almost like you're breathing in through a straw.
Okay. Now I want to move on to Passover.
Okay, Passover.
And how
you don't want to Passover because no. Passover is...
Now, I always have to...
Friday, right?
I always have to make a disclaimer. I am not a religious person. I love traditions and traditional food and getting together with family and friends and singing songs and telling stories. And Passover is a great time for singing songs and telling stories.
Right.
And there are all kinds of fun traditional foods. It's especially challenging for a vegan, because during Passover, for a long time, we're not supposed to be eating wheat, fermented wheat or leavened wheat, and somebody came up with a long list of other foods that shouldn't be eaten as well, and beans and rice were on that list, and that made it especially challenging. And now, recently, I read at a website called Forward.com. There has been a movement that has overturned the 800-year-old Passover ban on rice and legumes. So now let them all eat beans and rice.
Yeah, let them eat beans. The land of beans.
We can now eat beans and rice. It's interesting because there are different kinds of Jews from where they're from. There's the Ashkenazi, which is the European Jew, and then there's the Sephardic, which comes from the Middle Eastern areas and the Mediterranean areas. And the Sephardic have been allowed to eat beans and rice because that's all they eat. That's what they've lived on. But the Ashkenazi, for some reason, banned beans and rice. Maybe somebody didn't like beans and rice back then and said, we're not eating it on this holiday.
Or maybe it was difficult to grow beans and rice. And
I don't know what the history is.
We don't know much, but we're just letting you know
for those who care, we can now eat beans and rice on Passover.
And again, Karen is opened with a disclaimer that she is not religious, but she was raised Jewish. I am not religious, but I was raised Catholic. So we have this funny video that we like to watch about an Italian, by an Italian comedian. I think if you just Google Italian comedian's first Passover, my friend Nick Raffello, who has a fabulous solo performance piece called Yeah, That Happened, which has won all kinds of awards at the solo competition here in New York and is now coming back. So go see it. His name is Nick Raffello. Turned me on to this guy by posting it on his Facebook page. His name is...
Sebastian Maniscalco,
and he's hysterical. He does this great YouTube bit on his first Passover, an Italian going to his first Passover, and it's so true, because I am of Italian ancestry, and when I went to my first Passover, it was exactly like that.
The other thing I wanted to mention about Passover was a fascinating article about the Passover matzah in the New York Times Magazine this past week, and you can see it online, and it's called The Man Who Could Make Everyone's Bread Taste Better. And if you've ever tried matzah, typically the store-bought brand, it's just wheat and water and salt. Mm. And it's kind of a bland cracker.
I love matzah.
And then there are more artisan types of matzah. And this particular author had tasted a particularly tasty artisanal version of matzah, and he wanted to find out what the difference was. And in this article, they talked about the farmer who created the wheat for this particular matzah and all the rules and regulations that the rabbis have to approve. It was really mind-boggling. What was mind-boggling to me is the rabbis didn't care if the wheat that this guy was growing was a higher quality or better tasting or more nutritious. They just wanted it to meet the rules that had been made 5,000 some odd years ago for this particular holiday. It's fascinating where people put their priorities.
Right. Talk about not evolving. But I guess evolution isn't something you want to talk about when you're talking about religion. Boom. Thank you. I'll be here for the next 30 or so minutes.
Now, another thing I talk about on Passover, and I wrote an article, which you can find at responsibleeatingandliving.com, called My Passover Tears, is we retell the story, the Passover story, how Moses. We love the Ten Commandments, which are all missed.
Moses. Let my people go. Moses. Edward G. Robinson was in that film, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Boo, Edward G. Robinson.
Anyway, that's always a fun film to watch, to kind of get a whitewashed version of a history or that maybe didn't even happen.
No pun intended, whitewash.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, anyway, we won't go any further there.
Right. So Moses is trying to talk the Egyptians in letting the Jews who are slaves leave Egypt and walk to freedom. And finally, after a lot of to-do, as we would call it here in New York, God comes along and visits 10 plagues on the Egyptians, really nasty stuff. Moses is allowed to leave with the Jews, and they walk 40 days and 40 nights, no, 40 years, sorry, in the desert until they found the promised land, Israel, and that's a whole nother story that started a whole lot of other problems that we're still going through today. But there's a lot of parallels in that story, symbolism about what's going on in the world today, and it frustrates me that some people, not all, are very close-minded and don't acknowledge the slavery of human beings today, because there's slavery everywhere, and even if it's not called slavery, there are like indentured servants, there are people that are living on such low wages, and
and a lot of it has to do with who picks our produce and who...
Most of the migrant workers, they live on like next to nothing.
Right, and it's...
And then, of course, there are the non-human animals in the factory farms that are enslaved.
Who need a voice, and that's why we do what we do here at Responsible Eating and Living, and we try to be the voice of the voiceless and package it in a way that is hopefully creative and easily accessible.
And delicious.
And delicious.
Because what's frustrating during the Passover, we read this story about the slaves, we sing the songs, we eat the symbolic foods, we taste the bitter tears, the salty water that we dip our parsley into to taste the tears. And then they serve the brisket.
Then we eat the slaughtered, tortured animal. Which is a segue right now that I kind of... I'm going to go with here, and I think Karen's going to pick up on it too, is how aggressive some people can be when they know that they're going to be hosting an event like a Passover Seder or just have a person who's vegan come and visit them in their home and spend some time with them. Some people are very gracious and lovely and wonderful.
Absolutely.
And, you know, bend over backwards to make you feel comfortable. And then there are those who are really, you can't say they're passive aggressive because they aren't passive about it. They're just plain old aggressive about their opinions and want to make them known immediately. And they do it through physical actions, not necessarily through words.
I want to give a few examples.
Yes, and I was going to say, Karen, you've got some examples.
I do, and I want to bring this up because it's really important to talk about this.
Especially for you if you are going vegan and you're going to your first gathering of friends or family and they are not vegan. Here's some interesting things to note from our end. Karen's a plus 30-year vegan now, and I'm 10, going on 10 years next year. So you're going to encounter all sorts of things, and Karen's got some great
what to
tips
do and what
you,
not to
and
do.
Some words of wisdom. So another drum roll. Karen, what to do and what not to do when somebody slams you in the face with a steak.
Okay. In the last few months, when I've done a little traveling or visited someone's home, a number of times I was really surprised because I came into the house and it reeked of bacon smells and egg smells and meat cooking smells. And in one instant, my friend said, "Oh, I really wanted to prepare all of this stuff yesterday, but I didn't get to it. So I had to do it right now when you're coming." So here was someone who knew it would offend me. And still, you know, maybe she really ran out of time and this was the only time that she had, but I was floored and I was uncomfortable because those kind of smells make me really ill. But I was a guest in her home and I was grateful to be a guest in her home. So what do you do? And that happened again in another home recently. Again, preparing all this meat in a home where other vegans live too. I don't know how they manage to do that together when a meat eater lives with a vegan, but many people do that harmoniously, and I give them a lot of credit. And then on Facebook, where people get really aggressive,
right?
A friend of mine was traveling and posted that she was eating in a restaurant that served horse meat. And there was a picture of the horse's hooves kind of on a stake.
Right.
And then the rest of the leg was draped out so that they could cut the meat away. And she was talking about how wonderful this restaurant was. And she tagged me in it saying, "Sorry, Karen Hartglass Vegan, for this." And I was wondering, why was that necessary to put my name there? Because I didn't want to see that and I didn't need to see that. And why did she feel that she needed?
Well, I have a theory. I think it's because you're getting to them and they're feeling the guilt. And so when you feel the guilt about something, what do? You usually say,
Here's another example.
I shouldn't be doing this, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Here's another example. My parents were at a New Year's Eve dinner with their friends, and they all know me for decades, most of my life. They all know what a big deal vegan I am, and they were all eating their steak and lobster and kind of laughing and saying, "A good thing Karen isn't here."
Right, and then they had to tell you that they said that.
Yeah.
And so I think it's because, you know, your compassionate way and your non-judgmental way, your vegan way, is getting to people. And especially it's usually the people that know you really well and know you as a vegan and just either embrace that when you come into their home and say, "Look, I've made this whole thing for you." I know that my family members that know I'm vegan, obviously they all know I'm vegan. So they go out of their way to make sure that, I mean, they even sit there and say to me, "Don't eat that. That has cheese in it." And so they'll look out for me. They'll get my back, and you know, they'll still indulge in whatever they want to eat. But they have always made sure that I have felt very at home and at peace.
So the point is, this kind of thing happens all the time. And it can be really difficult when you're new at being a vegan or testing the waters because it can be intimidating, it can be embarrassing. But what I recommend is take the high road, don't react, you don't have to be confrontational, you don't have to prove anything, you just have to sit in the knowing that you're at peace for doing what you're doing.
Right. And
that's very powerful.
Continue doing what you're doing. And then, you know, as things progress and you feel more comfortable with how it is that you do things, then you can take on it's all about evolving. You can take on your vegan persona, but it's really releasing who you are. And so I have this theory that we all underneath are vegan. And we're conditioned to think otherwise. And, you know, we talked about this last week and we said my horrible experience with watching a calf being slaughtered at a very young age stuck with me. And yet I covered it with layers and layers and layers of rhetoric about how meat is good for you and how you have to eat meat and it's all about the protein and blah, blah, blah that many of you out there are also experiencing. And the when I did release myself from that rhetoric, everything started to evolve for me and change in such a magnificent way. Caterpillar butterfly analogy or whatever it is you want to use, lifting the veil. Speaking of John Robbins, he mentioned lifting the veil several times in a speech that I listened to him do. And it is. It's like lifting the veil and seeing the world. And it's not always the pretty world that you think you're seeing. It's actually you see the world for what it is, and it's an unhappy place. So remember that if you're transitioning, there's going to be a lot of passive-aggressive, aggressive people out there that are going to try and... Yeah, I get this all the time. And the best way I can explain it to you is by giving you some dialogue.
Yeah, dialogue helps.
When we're sitting around the table at dinner with friends who aren't vegan, and they know that I'm a new vegan, the questions they'll ask me, either in front of Karen or when Karen goes off to the restroom, is, don't you miss having a steak? Come on, don't you want to just have a big bite of this steak? Come on, Gare, tell us what you really feel. Come on, Karen's in the bathroom. Don't you really want to have a steak? Just don't you miss it? Don't you miss it, Gare? Don't you miss it, pal? And I'm like, no, actually, I don't.
Leave me alone. Get out of here.
And then I'm like, ah, Karen, take me away. But you just have to be really cool and grown up and say, no, but please, am I making you feel uncomfortable by not eating steak in front of you? Because, I'm sorry, I'll go to another table.
Another funny thing, funny, sad, I don't know what, but many people, when they know you're vegan and they know you're into healthy eating and they think, or they say, well, what do you eat? I wouldn't know what to eat. And yet you go to a restaurant with them. And the first thing they do is they look at the menu and say, oh, you can have this. They know exactly what to eat.
I love that.
Oh, here's something for you. This looks nice.
Yeah, get ready for that. Transitioning vegans.
Where they pick things out for you on the menu.
People are going to start ordering for you. It's really fun.
So the point, there are many points here, but people are aware they are uncomfortable with meat eating.
Right. And...
Subconsciously, consciously, they're uncomfortable with it.
Absolutely. Very uncomfortable. And they want to be vegans too, but they just haven't had the right kind of nudge. So Diet for a New America is a great book to start with. Way of the Peaceful Warrior, excellent book of woo-woo-wah-wah, feel-good philosophy about how to take control back in your own life. And what do you eat? You come to Responsible Eating and Living and go to What Vegans Eat and check it out. And the most recent post is
you're going to be licking your screen.
Yeah, is my favorite. We went out to dinner to start the launch of Karen's birthday week. You know, on Earth Day, April 22nd, Karen Hartglass was born. She will be 29 years old on Friday. And we normally have a huge celebration every year. Last few years, we've had the Happy Birthday Review, which was our big fundraiser. And last year, we did it here in Queens, in Forest Hills. And then it was the number one tourist destination. Now it seems to be the number one real estate destination for people wanting to live in New York City because Brooklyn is priced out.
Come to Queens while you can afford it.
Manhattan is priced out. So Queens will be next, and then probably the Bronx, and then last will be Staten Island.
Staten Island, never.
Yeah. No, I think Staten Island will have its day, too. Huh. And but anyway, Queens now is the place to be. And it's not only the place to be for real estate and living, but it's also a really cool place to be for food. It always has been. I mean, we have so many different languages spoken here, so many different cultures. And so it was rated the number one tourist destination last year by Lonely Planet. And so we had our Happy Birthday Review here last year in Forest Hills at a great place called Jade. They have vegan options, and they did a whole vegan menu for us, and it was beautiful. Well, we couldn't do that because this year we have family on Friday,
Passover.
Karen's
the Passover.
Family will celebrate. They do celebrate Passover. So we started our birthday celebration on
Sunday night
at one of our favorite restaurants in Manhattan, Candle Cafe West. So go to What Vegans Eat to see some of this phenomenal food that is prepared in restaurants, and you will never want to go to another restaurant again.
They're always good, but somehow they're getting better.
Oh, they were always good for me.
This was my best meal ever. I had a corn-crusted tempeh.
Right.
And as you may know, Gary doesn't like to have mushrooms, and I love mushrooms. So when I eat out, I frequently order, I overdo the mushrooms. And this had a porcini mushroom sauce, and then it was sautéed with wild mushrooms. Mashed potatoes. Who doesn't love mashed potatoes?
You could sell anything with mashed potatoes. You could sell an old boot if you serve it with mashed potatoes. That's a rule that Jimmy Connors taught me, a chef that worked with me at a restaurant I opened in California. Chef Jimmy Connors. If you're out there listening, he's one of the greatest chefs. Go vegan, Jimmy. You would be phenomenal, a phenomenal vegan chef. But he said, Gary, I can sell anything with mashed potatoes. I can sell a shoe on a plate with mashed potatoes. So, and you know, mashed potatoes are vegan, and you can now put vegan butter on them. We talked about Miyoko's vegan butter last week on this show.
Mm.
But the thing we like to do at Responsible Eating and Living is braised garlic. I got this from Chef Eric Tucker, formerly of the Millennium Restaurant in San Francisco, and he now has his own restaurant in, what is it, Redwood City?
No, it's something with an R, Riverdale or something. I don't know what it's called.
I thought it was Redwood City.
The Oakland area.
Yeah, I thought it was around Redwood City. Anyway, Google Chef Eric Tucker if you're in the Bay Area and go to his restaurant. But Eric, instead of butter, Eric adds a little braised garlic to his mashed potatoes. Or you could add roasted garlic to your mashed potatoes, and it's very buttery.
We have that recipe at Responsible Eating and Living.
We do.
Gary DeMattei's version.
We do. And so go to What Vegans Eat. And we've been talking a lot about when you're at a restaurant or when you're at someone's home, how do you transition to a plant-based diet? How do you stay on your path, your vegan path? And one of the ways is if somebody suggests you all go to dinner. Some of these restaurants now are becoming very popular and very trendy with vegans and non-vegans alike. Why don't you suggest taking them out to a vegan restaurant in your area? And if you live in the New York area, start with Candle. They either have Candle Cafe West or Candle Cafe, which was the first vegan restaurant Karen took me to, and I was hooked at that point. I was just like, wow, if you can eat like this every day, who wants to eat anything that's been tortured?
Yep.
And so, and then they have Candle 79. So What Vegans Eat. Now, another thing we talk about when we do our happy birthday review is all the other programs here at Responsible Eating and Living. And you're listening to one of them, the Real Radio and Podcasts, the All About Food show, which we now have transcriptions for most of the shows.
And while we're talking about transcriptions, whoever is going to transcribe this show, thank you so much for transcribing this show. I am so grateful to all of our transcribers. And, you know, you don't really know about what goes on behind the scenes. A lot of things go on behind the scenes just to do a program like this. And I found that it's so valuable to have the transcriptions. And we couldn't possibly do that. It's time-consuming.
Although you tried, I remember.
I did try, and now we have wonderful volunteers.
You actually succeeded, but it was you never had a minute to yourself. So now we have so many wonderful transcribers out there. So what we usually do at our happy birthday review, besides eat vegan cake and do a show by the Swingin' Gourmets, is we thank all of the people that have helped us. Thanking you is another big part of what we do, and so thank you for listening. Thank you for
caring.
Thank
you for
enough
caring
and paying attention. We are celebrating our fifth year.
In July.
We started this in July of 2011, and so we are very happy to still be here. And like we always love to say, we do it all out of a one-bedroom apartment in Queens. So the other thing we talk about is our original recipes, which you hear a lot about. And several of them are now in cookbooks and about to be published cookbooks. So we're happy that our recipes people find lovely enough to publish.
Can I talk about our recipes for a minute?
Absolutely.
Something I discovered or rediscovered or was reminded of recently when I was traveling, and I made our creamy kale pesto, your recipe. Creamy kale pesto, which is a really great recipe. I made it at someone's home. And it's when you don't use the same ingredients. Well, I mean, black pepper is an ingredient, but if it's not the same brand, if it's not the same quality, it will affect the flavor of your food. And I made this pesto and it was not quite the same. So we use like 3 garlic cloves, mm-hmm. and our garlic cloves weren't big buffalo-y size, and this person had really big garlic cloves, so I cut down on the number of garlic cloves, and then I thought, man, it wasn't garlicky enough. So depending on the non-dairy milks you might use, we normally use unsweetened soy milk, which is just soybeans and water, nothing else, and I grabbed the unsweetened almond milk in this house, and I love almond milk, and it gave it a nice nutty flavor, but it was different.
Right.
And if you're making a recipe from our site or any book, and for some reason you don't like it or it doesn't come out exactly right, it just could have something to do with your ingredients and the ingredients that were used in the original recipe and may require a little zhuzhing.
Yes. And if you have any questions, info@realmeals.com will get you answers. So
exactly.
Don't hesitate to let us know if you're having a problem with our recipes. But we take our recipes very seriously. It's what we do here at Responsible Eating and Living, and we're always looking for people out there who make them to let us know that they've made them and how you adjust them. There's a lot of chefs out there who like to take the basic plan and then make it their own, and please let us know what you did, because that's really fun for us to see. And we love having someone make our recipes. And we have over 400 plant-based recipes.
And more coming every day.
Original plant-based recipes. But I guess nothing is really original, is it? I mean, it all comes from...
I like to call it theme and variation.
Theme and variation. But and there is a method to our madness. There's a method to our recipes. And what they are designed to do, again, is this site was started, this organization was started, because we want to give people the tools they need to feel confident enough to transition without fearing that, well, you know, because we all want to go back when we don't think something is working. Mm. I know so many people who said, oh, I was vegan for a week and I just had to go back and have a big cheeseburger. And so obviously I'm thinking to myself, well, you didn't go to a place that sells plant-based cheeseburgers, or you didn't go and find a way to make your own gooey, sloppy, schmeary, you know, heavy 15-pound sandwich, because that's what you're going to need to feel like you can do when you say, I'm cutting myself free from this meat-centric society that I live in. And so, and everything is about meat. I mean, it's about meat and pharmaceuticals. When you sit and watch the tube, not the YouTube, but the actual TV that many people still watch, it's all drug commercials, and it's all fast food and meat commercials and processed food commercials. And I doubt you will rarely see a commercial that doesn't, if it involves food, you will rarely see a commercial that doesn't also involve tortured and cooked animals.
Yeah. So if you're struggling and if you find you're hungry eating just plants, number one is you're not eating enough, and that's the beauty of this diet. If you're eating the right things, like Dr. Furman recommends, greens, beans, onions, mushrooms, berries, and seeds, you can eat as many greens and beans as you want.
Right.
Have a giant burrito filled with some vegetables and beans,
avocado. Believe it or not, you can have a giant burrito as long as the tortilla that you're wrapping it in isn't made with lard, and you just have to ask. I mean, I go... Occasionally, I go into Chipotle, And there is a burrito there, that meaning there is a tortilla that isn't made with lard, and so you just have to ask them, which one do you not?
They put whey sometimes and milk products in them too. You can never be too careful.
Right.
But you know what, Gary?
What's that, Karen?
We have managed to babble away 55 minutes.
Really?
Isn't that incredible?
Right.
So I just wanted to say happy birthday to me.
Happy birthday, Karen.
Happy Earth Day and happy birthday to me. If you want, you're welcome to wish me a happy birthday. I take in all the love I can get, and I think you should too, because the only way we're going to survive in this world is by sharing the love.
Right. It's only about love.
It's all about love, and it's food. All about food.
So, food and love. So love your food because you love yourself. Love yourself enough to ingest only love and not anything that's been tortured. That's the most religious thing I think you could ever do. And people who don't and say that they are religious people are hypocrites. I'm sorry. I'm just going to go out and say it.
Yeah.
You're all a bunch of hypocrites.
Humans do have a problem with hypocrisy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and I was a hypocrite for many years.
I think in some ways it's a survival technique, but that could be a theme for another show.
Well, whatever. Thanks for listening, and go to responsibleeatingandliving.com. And if you like what we do, make a donation, because we are a not-for-profit organization.
Yes, and thank you for those who have already supported us. We really appreciate it. Hugs to you. Okay, thank you for joining us on It's All About Food. I'm Karen Hartglass, and I'm here with Gary DeMattei. And remember, have a delicious week.